everyone, and welcome to this podcast from Lighthouse Church in Ireland. Fáilteachadaíonn podcast as Chuck Sullis and you. Today, Pastor Jamie Corcoran continues the series This Is Us and explains what being part of Lighthouse Church is all about.
Well, Giadweave, everybody, you're so very welcome to Lighthouse Church. It's so good to be able to connect with you once again this week, wherever you're watching from, whatever device you're watching from, whatever part of the country or world you're watching from. It is just so great to be able to come to your place and space today and bring something of what I believe is going to be a message of hope and encouragement for your life. Last week we learned a key phrase around here, which is Fáilte Valia, which means welcome home. I want to say to everyone who's watching today, by virtue of this incredible thing called technology, Fáilte Valia. We aren't just a church service you go to, but we're a family that you can be part of. And of course, we are in the middle of a series called This Is Us, which is pretty cool. It's a four-part series. Really what we're doing in this series is, well, if you're community, you're part of the family, it's kind of clarifying the bedrock, the values, the core tenets that make us who we are. And if you're not community, but you're curious, you're looking in, you've been tracking along with us, you've been watching for the last while, or maybe today's your first time watching a massive Cade Mila Fáilte, you're curious and you're kind of wondering, what's this all about? This series is going to be really good for both of those groups. Why? Because we're going to clarify, whether it's community or curious, who we are as a church. Over the next few weeks, we're going to find out who we are, we're going to find out what we're about, and we're going to find out, to some degree, where we are going. Now, last week, in part one, we discovered a church, okay, as we talk about this is us and who we are, and we obviously are Lighthouse Church, we discovered church is not a couple of things. Church is not, number one, a building, okay? Even though we've come to associate culturally church with buildings, church in essence, and definitely church biblically, is not a building. In the same vein, church is not an institution, okay? So many of us, we think of church, think of all these religious systems, institutions, or political structures. Church is not, biblically speaking, an institution. And church, of course, thirdly, is not a cult, okay? There are cults out there that call themselves churches, but the Church of Jesus Christ, is not a cult. In essence, then, church is not something you go to, okay? It's something you're part of. The church, we discovered last week, is a family, and we want you to be part of this family. And if you are part of this family, we want to say to you that we love you and we're so glad you're part of this family. And if you're someone who right now finds himself roaming without a place to call home, a spiritual home, a faith community, a place to a tribe to have some friends, that's why we say Fáilte Valia. We say welcome home. And today, in part two of this series, I want to talk to you about This Is Us serving. I want to talk to you today about the whole area and subject of serving, not just kind of why it's important, but theologically speaking, what is it and what benefit does it bring to our lives? And if you're someone who's community or curious and you're watching today, why is this so fundamental to our identity, not just as Christ followers, but also as Lighthouse Church? Now, to kick us off, let me ask this question. You ever wondered or ever took time to stop and think about how when you were a child, you know, if someone ever asked you, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was almost natural for us, wasn't it, to think about things that were great. I mean, come on, when someone said to you, what do you want to be when you grow up? You're like, I want to be a great doctor. I want to be a great fireman. I want to be a great policeman. I want to be a great musician or artist. I want to be a great leader. I want to be a great innovator or inventor. I want to be a great... whatever it was, we all had these dreams of one day doing great things in great ways that would bring about great benefit to the world. And then, of course, as we get older, along the way, something changes, right? We go to school, we learn life is hard, life is tough, everything's not as easy as we thought it was when we were a child. The innocence, so to speak, of childhood and childishness is taken away from us. We have to pay bills, there's college. Along the way, something changes. We change, our perspective change, our experience changes. And all of a sudden, that dream of one day doing great things that would bring about great change kind of changes too. And it changes in one of two ways. Either number one, we give up on the ideal. We say it's too hard, it's too long, it's too far, I'm too small, I'm too unable, I'm too insignificant to be able to live up to that idea of greatness. Or number two, we redefine the idea. You know, as a child, greatness was all about helping people, okay? That's what doctors and policemen and firemen do. They help people, they serve people. But as we get older, we redefine that idea to say, no, greatness is actually about money. Greatness is about status. Greatness is about popularity. Greatness is about strength. Greatness is about position. Greatness is about power. And something changes and shifts. And again, we can see this right through our culture because that's what our culture glorifies. But what we come to realize, what I want us to see again today, is that greatness is not in essence. Greatness is not in reality. And greatness is not, definitely, biblically speaking, about money, about power, and about status. Let's play a little game just to illustrate this fact. If I were to ask you, think of three, okay, three historically famous people who were historically great because of their money, power, and status. Try to think of three. In fact, if you have those three names, write them down on your phone or write them down in a notebook or just make a mental note, okay? More than likely, the vast majority of us are struggling to even find one. Maybe a few of us have found two, maybe even lesser few have found three. But the vast majority of people are thinking, historically great people who are great because of their money, power, and status. It's hard, isn't it? But if I flip that question's head and say, well, name three people who were great, not because of money, power, or status, but because of the way they helped people, because of the way they served people, because of the difference they made in the lives of others. And straight away, it's a much easier thing because names like Mother Teresa come to mind. I mean, what an incredible woman. Gave her life to the service of the poor in India. People like Florence Nightingale come to mind because of her work in helping the sick. People like Bishop Desmond Tutu, okay, and his role in South Africa and politics and the AIDS epidemic in Africa come to mind. And even though he's not necessarily historical yet, even people like Bono, who despite the fact has money, wealth and power, the real reason why Bono is as well known as he is, our very own Dublin-born Irish rock star, isn't because of his fame as a musician per se, but because of all the work that he has done for years now to raise the cause and concern and vision of the poor worldwide. What's the one thing all these people have in common, despite the fact that their pictures are all black and white, as someone said to me earlier? It's the fact that every single one of them are great, not because of money, power, status. Greatness is what? What is greatness by this comparison? Greatness is, in fact, service. What they all have in common is they devoted their lives to serving other people. Now, take the word serving in the English dictionary and how is it defined? Well, the word serving is defined as being useful or helpful to others. In essence, serving is the ability, is the capacity, is the commitment to be useful and helpful to others. And here's the truth. Come on, just be honest with me for a second. Okay, here's the truth. Come on. We know service, right? We know it. We know service when we see it. And not only do we know it, but let's be honest. We like service, right? We really like good service, good customer service, good experience. We like service. In fact, the reason why we know and we like it is because we feel service. We know when it's there and we know when it's not there. Think of a time where recently you were in a coffee shop or restaurant. I know it may have seemed forever because of this pandemic, but the last time you were in a customer environment, it could have been a phone call to an internet provider. It might have been at a petrol station, wherever it might be. It might have been at work. You know, what's one of the things that infuriates us, especially in the Western world, in our consumer-driven culture? It's bad customer service. Why? Because we have come to believe that it is our inalienable right, that we are owed, that we deserve good customer service. And there's a sense in where that may be true because we are paying for a product or service. But when we don't get good service, or when we're made to feel like we're in the wrong for expecting service, we get angry. Why? Because it's a testament to the fact that we know, we like, and we feel service. Service matters to us. And we actually know more about service than sometimes we let on or think that we do. So today what I want to do is I want to ask the question, very simply, what is serving? Not just by the dictionary definition, which I just already explained, but more broadly, theologically, what is the theology of serving the Bible gives us? And how does it apply to us? What ways does it benefit us? And why is it important, or why is it so important to Lighthouse Church specifically? Now, a couple of things. First of all, to say to you that as I was going through my files from all the messages I've preached in the past, I realized we talk a lot in this church about service. And the reason why we talk a lot about it is because it's really, really important. However, what I also realized was that I've never really done a kind of exhaustive or a comprehensive message on serving, okay? In fact, serving is such a big topic, it deserves an entire series. It's always been there, but I've never really kind of taken the time to lay out the whole kind of argument or discussion or explanation for why serving is so essential. So today, what I want to do is I want to give you a theology of serving, and I want to give you a kind of direction for why serving is so important to us. And to help us answer this question and start off the conversation, let's turn in our Bibles now to Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 43 to 45. And again, all of today's notes on the Bible app, a YouVersion, you can download them and you can track along with me. But open your Bible app or your physical Bible, or I'm going to put it on the screen. We're going to read in Mark's Gospel. Again, Mark was, believe it or not, an early disciple of Jesus. He actually never met Jesus personally. Many scholars, historians reckon that Mark's account, Mark's Gospel account of the life of Jesus was actually dictated to him by the Apostle Peter. Okay, so it's likely that Mark's information is coming to him directly from the Apostle Peter himself. Also, interesting enough, you may not know this, but even though the order of the Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Mark's Gospel was the first Gospel to be written, okay? And Mark's Gospel is kind of like an overview. It's kind of like a comic book, less of a newspaper, and it's all about bang, 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 bang. Here's all the important things Jesus said. Here's all the important things Jesus did. If you have become a Christ follower and you're trying to figure out what it means, read Mark's Gospel. It's brilliant. And in chapter 10, there's this amazing story of where the disciples began to realize that what Jesus had come to do wasn't just to start a new church or start a nice little club or bring some pleasant teachings. The real reason for Jesus coming was to start a spiritual revolution. A spiritual revolution that not only rocked that world, but 2,000 years later is still rocking our world. Okay, it's incredible. And as they began to twig or cop on to the fact this was bigger than they first expected, they began to realize that Jesus was becoming great, okay, because they didn't really realize he was already great because he was God. They were close to him, okay? So by virtue of being connected to him, they were kind of like in a position to gain benefit by virtue of their friendship. And this conversation broke out about who was the greatest and who was going to be close and who was going to have the highest positions in government once Jesus was, of course, elected into this power. And what happens so interesting is Jesus overhears the argument and discussion and says, hang on a second, you guys have fundamentally misunderstood what's happening here on two levels. Number one, I have not come to start a political party to bring about a political revolution in one country. I have come to revolutionize the world forever. What I'm about to do next in terms of the kingdom of God coming to the world isn't just some nice footnote in the annals of history that's going to lead to my teachings and my thoughts being spread around the world as just good advice. I'm coming to fundamentally transform the spiritual reality of humanity. Boom! I mean, it's just like, it's a revolution of eternity. Second of all, you fundamentally misunderstood what it means to be great, what it means to be effective, what it means to be applauded in this kingdom that I am bringing. He basically tells disciples, don't be like the world who defines greatness as money, power, status, strength, all these things. But understand that from God's perspective, greatness is defined very differently. So verse 43, here's what Jesus says. He says, not so with you. Don't be like the world. Instead, okay, swap that out. And instead, whoever wants to become great among you. Notice Jesus saying, there's nothing wrong with a desire to become great as long as that greatness isn't egocentric, okay, but actually is about making an impact that will help other people. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Wow. That's kind of revolutionary. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. This is huge. What Jesus is saying is, hey, let me redefine greatness. Greatness is not all the things that our culture tells it is, but greatness is actually about service. And if you want to be great in my eyes, if you want to be great in the kingdom, if you want to be great according to God's standards, then greatness is not about going up. Greatness is not about becoming strong or wealthy or any of these things. Not that the wealth or influence are bad things, but greatness is actually about using these things to help other people. Then he says, and if you want to be first in God's, if you want to be the top of the list, so to speak, then you must be willing to be slave of all. Now, here's what Jesus is not saying. Jesus is not saying we should give up our human rights, that we should become slaves, that we should set ourselves away. There was a branch of Christians who, at one point in history, felt like to be effective missionaries, they literally had to sell themselves into slavery. And so white Christians in the 1600s literally sold themselves into slavery in order to be missionaries. Now, that's an incredible sacrifice. But that's not what this verse is saying. He's not saying we should become slaves in position, but rather we should become servants in posture. I'll say it again. Jesus is not saying we should become servants or slaves in position, okay? But that we should become servants in posture, in attitude. The attitude of those who follow Jesus, the posture of those who call themselves Christians, and by default, the posture of his church should not be a political authority and stepping on people and breaking people and abusing and using people. That's what institutions do. That's what cults do. That's what buildings do. No. Church, the family of God, okay? What we're talking about here, the family of God should be marked, recognized, characterized by service. The greatest among us shall be our servants. It is a posture that shouldn't just be an add-on to our Christian experience, like a nice little attachment, like an app or a widget to our lives, but service should be a fundamentally characterizing value in who we are. We should be recognized as followers of Jesus because of our service. And he says that if we want to be great, the best, according to God, the best in the kingdom will be the least. I can remember growing up, and my father, as I've told many of you many times, served in the military. And the branch that he served in was like the pinnacle of the military. It was the special forces. And oftentimes my dad would say, we're the best of the best, you know? And it's kind of like in sport or in other arenas of life, we all know who the best of the best are because they're glorified, and we want to learn from them and we want to become like them, and they're great, and they get all the spotlight and they get all the coverage and they get all the support and they get all the sponsoring and they get everything because they're the best of the best. Well, Jesus says in the kingdom of God, things are turned upside down because by the world standards, the best of the best. Jesus says the best in the kingdom become the least, because they realize it's not about them, it's about other people. Greatness in God's eyes is not what you do for you. Greatness in God's eyes is not what God has done for you for your sake. Greatness in God's eyes is what God has done in you and through you for other people's sake. Now you might say, well, hang on a second, what are you basing that off of, Jamie? Well, let's look at the next verse in verse 45. Because Jesus goes, as revolutionary as those comments were, what he says next is it's mind-blowing. He says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Whoa, what's Jesus saying? Well, he says, this is so important. This is so interesting. This isn't just some additional extra. This is core to who we are. So much so that I, Jesus, the Son of Man, okay, it's a messianic term, describes the fact that he isn't just some prophet, some priest, some teacher, some rabbi, or some philosopher or revolutionary. He is God in the flesh. The Son of Man did not come to be served, even though he deserved it, even though it was his right, even though he's God and all these things, but he came to serve, not just to serve once off, but his identity, his nature, his mission was service. The greatest expression or the culmination of that service being the fact that he would in fact give his life as a ransom. What's a ransom? Well, a ransom is where someone's held hostage, they don't have the power to free themselves, someone else must pay a price, risk their lives to save that person in hostility so they can be free. You see, Jesus came to serve us in many ways, but principally and most importantly, he came to serve us in the fact that we, because of our sin, were captive to that sin, captive to our brokenness, captive to our depression, captive to our own humanity, and unable to become free. And Jesus, who is perfect, Jesus, who is without sin, Jesus, who is above sin, came and gave himself for our sin so we who were in captivity could be free. That's what a ransom is. God came to serve us so that we could be free. And again, when you think about it, this is the apparent dichotomy of God. The word dichotomy means these things, these ideas should be opposed to each other. These should be contradictions. How can God, the creator of the world, serve his creation? The whole point of creation is that it serves creator. I mean, you don't serve your toaster, do you? Come on, somebody. You don't serve your kettle, do you? I mean, you don't serve your oven. These things serve you. Creation serves its creator. In fact, we judge these utensils and these technologies, don't we? We judge one computer or one phone or one thing above another by how well it serves us in practicality. It makes no sense the creator of the world would want to serve us. But the truth is, because God is love and because we discovered last week we are his family, okay? The truth is he came into this world to save us. God came to serve. Service and being a servant and serving aren't just nice, you know, ideas that are part of Christian religion. Service and serving are fundamentally at the heart and core of what it means to be a Christ follower. Let me say it more poignantly. Let me put it in a more challenging way. You cannot be following Jesus and not following Jesus in service. It's a contradiction of terms. If you're a Christ follower, then you're following Jesus, and Jesus came to serve. Therefore, we as his people and we as his church should do likewise. Now, there's something really implicit in this statement, or something implicit in this text, and that is Jesus came to save us, but our salvation has a purpose beyond just going to heaven, okay? Some of us have fallen through the trap of thinking that salvation is for when we die and we go to heaven. No, that's part of our salvation, but our salvation affects our life now. Salvation is not about one day us going to heaven. Salvation is about heaven coming to earth now and making a difference. Because let's be honest, look around. Have you not noticed that the natural default of humanity is not to create an oasis, it's to create hell. Humans, when left to their own devices and are self-seeking and egotistic and only looking after their own selves, what is produced in those systems is hell. People suffer collectively and broadly when our whole lives and existence is about ourselves. In contrast to this, what happens when God's Holy Spirit breaks into the heart of a man or woman, transforms them by his love? Gives them a new life, a new value system, a new vision, to where now greatness is not about me and how great I am, but the difference I make in the world. Our salvation has a purpose beyond just one day going to heaven. Now, the Apostle Paul, he clarified this in the book of Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8, okay? So in Ephesians 2, verse 8, 10, the Apostle Paul, trying to clarify this exact thought, said, "For it is by grace you have been saved, through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is a gift." Salvation is a gift. We didn't ask for it. In fact, maybe you're watching right now and you don't believe in Jesus. That's okay. Your belief in God does not make him any less of who he is. Your disbelief in his sacrifice for your life, in him giving himself to serve you, to ransom you for freedom, does not take away from the fact that he has done it for you anyway. It is a gift that you can reject. Understand, religion oftentimes forces people to try believe what it teaches. But faith, the gospel, the good news of Jesus is good news. And good news is never forced on anybody, okay? Otherwise, it's bad news. It is a gift that you can accept or reject according to what you believe. Okay, it's not created by works. We can't make it happen. Okay, it's not because we're good people or we've done good things that one day we're going to get into heaven. It's a gift that we must receive through faith by grace. And therefore, he says, no man, no woman, no person can boast, because we had nothing to do with it. Okay, our salvation is not produced by our strength, our ability, our religiosity. Our salvation is produced by the service and sacrifice of God. Okay, verse 10. For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. This is huge. This is huge. What is the Apostle Paul saying? What he's saying is that Jesus came to serve us, to give his life as a ransom so we could be saved. Okay? Grace was the means of this salvation, meaning grace is undeserved favor. We didn't deserve this. I mean, come on, let's be honest. We know ourselves. We know who we are. We did not deserve for God, who is perfect and love and kind and good, to die for us, but he did. So grace is the means. But faith was the vehicle. Not our work. Our works aren't what make that salvation real to us. It's our faith. It is by faith that we have been saved. We put our faith, we put our trust, we put our hope, we put the weight of our lives in God's hands because of his grace. And that's where salvation happens, okay? So grace was the means, faith was the vehicle, but service was the destination, okay? Service was not heaven, okay, per se, but heaven, not heaven, us going to heaven, but heaven coming to earth. And where am I getting this from? Well, look at verse 10. We are God's handiwork. Now, that word handiwork in the Greek language, which the Apostle Paul wrote, is actually translated as masterpiece, okay? We are, listen to me carefully, if the world has told you you're worthless, if the world has told you you're crap, if the world has told you you're a mistake, an accident, if the world has told you you're a failure, listen closely to what I'm about to say. God says you are his masterpiece. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, where you're coming from, whether you believe or don't believe, whether you're community or curious, whether you're agnostic or atheist. Listen to me. God says you are his masterpiece. Every one of us is his master. What does that imply? It means we were created. We were created on purpose. We were created with purpose, and we were created for purpose. God does not make mistakes, okay? God does not do rough drafts, okay? God creates masterpieces. And every single person watching and listening right now, understand that you are God's masterpiece. You were created on purpose. You were created with purpose, and you were created for purpose. And the deepest longing of your heart, the deepest desire of your heart is to discover and walk in and fulfill that purpose. It is the deepest desire of every man and woman on the planet Earth, is to discover this purpose. Now understand, this is huge, that our service, okay, our service is not an attempt to earn this greatness, but our service is a response to a gift. Remember, we can't earn, it's not our work, we can't boast, okay? We don't serve God because we feel guilty or we have to prove a point. We don't serve because of who we are, what we do. We serve because of who God is and what God has done. We serve in response to the fact that by grace and through faith, we have received this salvation through Jesus Christ. It's like the author, Neil T. Anderson, he put it this way. He said, we don't serve God to gain his acceptance. We are accepted, and so we serve God. Likewise, we don't follow him in order to be loved. We are loved, and therefore we follow him. We don't do these things to get. We have gotten. We have already received. Therefore, we do. It's not some religious sense of trying to prove our worth. It's because we've understood and experienced how accepted we are and how loved we are. We understand God's grace, true faith. We experience this, his gift in our lives. And therefore, we're compelled by love to offer ourselves in service to him and to follow his example in service to the world. Now, we have been given the gift of salvation, but we've also been given gifts. Okay, God's given us the gift of salvation through the person of Jesus Christ, but God has also given us gifts. We all have unique talents, abilities, strengths. We've been endowed. We've been given these things, okay, to us, but not for us. Your gifts, things that you're good at, your talents, they're given to you, but they're not given for you. They're given to you, but for the help and benefit and welfare of other people. You see, just like our salvation has a purpose beyond heaven, our gifts have a purpose beyond just serving serving ourselves. In fact, you want to meet a miserable person? Go find someone who's really talented and really good and has used their talent and their gift just to serve themselves. Some people can't get to a point where they can't hack it anymore and turn to all sorts of bad addictions to cover up the pain. Others, in their fame and glory, realize it's not enough and start opening charities and start thinking about, you know, how can I begin to give back is a word you often hear in media. How can I give back to the world? Why? What is that sports star, that musician, that Hollywood star, what are they saying in that language? They've come to understand that what they've been given was given to them but not for them. Therefore, they're compelled to give back. Why? Because in them is a witness. In them is a sense in where their talent is more than just something that they can use for their own gain and glory. Their talent, their status, their platform, their influence, their wealth should be used to make the world a better place. This isn't just a good thought. This is a biblical thought. Look with me in 1 Peter chapter 4. Apostle Peter, writing to Christians all over the world at the time, he says this. He says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received, okay? Don't focus on what gift you haven't received. Don't compare your gift to the other person's gift. As my father used to always say, there'll always be people in life who are bigger, stronger, and faster. It's a part of humanity. We're, you know, there's always someone out there better. Rather than wasting time complaining what we don't have or comparing what we do have, instead, let's put to work what God has given us. Each of us should use every gift you've received to what? To serve others as faithful stewards. Why faithful stewards? Because in essence, it's not ours. We didn't create it. We didn't make it happen. Yes, we may have honed it. Yes, we may have perfected through hard work and discipline, but we didn't create it, okay? We didn't. Great sports stars, great musicians can't take credit for their gift because they didn't create it. It was given to them and therefore they're stewards of it, okay? And notice the connection to grace, that we should use whatever gift we have to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace. Our gifts are given to us undeservedly. God favors us and pours out these gifts, not just for our benefit, but more importantly, for the benefit and welfare of others. You see, my friends, the bottom line is this. Using our gifts to serve others is the only way, and I stand over this statement, it's the only way we can find and fulfill our purpose. Using our gifts to serve others is the only way we can find and fulfill our purpose. There's lots of people who are extremely gifted, wealthy, have incredible influence, amazing platforms, but they're not fulfilled. You can see in their lifestyle, you can see in their choices. Many of them have ended up taking their own lives, which is a direct evidence for the fact that something was missing, something was lacking, something was not right in them, okay? And the point is that just having status and money and power and platform is not enough to fill the void in our heart. You see, every one of us has an extraordinary purpose that's been given to us by God. It's given to us by Him. It's given to us, but it's given for other people. And if we want to find fulfillment in this world, notice the examples of Mother Teresa and Florence Nightingale and Bishop Desmond Tutu and even Mono. It's not going to be in how we build our kingdom. It's in how we serve God and Him building His kingdom. Now, the good news in all this is that you don't have to be a genius to do this. Okay, you don't have to be an Albert Einstein to do this, okay? You don't have to be a genius, but you do have to be generous. You don't have to be a genius, but you've got to be willing to be generous with your time, with your talent, and with your treasure, your resources. It's in being generous with time, talent, and treasure that we can make an impact. And even though you don't have to be a genius, what did the genius say? Well, it was Albert Einstein himself who said, only a life lived in the service to others is worth living. These are the words of Albert Einstein. Only a life lived in service to others is a life worth living. So in essence then, what am I saying? Greatness is not found in intellect alone, or power alone, our talent alone, our wealth alone, our strength alone. Greatness is not found in any of these things alone, but greatness is defined, characterized, and in essence, service. Greatness is service, grace given to us that works in our lives, makes us great because we follow the example of our Savior in not being served, but seeking to be useful and helpful to the world around us. Jesus said in Matthew's Gospel 23, verse 11, "The greatest among you will be your servant." You want to be great in the world? You want to be great in the kingdom? You want to be great in God's eyes? Stop focusing on money, status, power, and fame, and start focusing on the people around you and ask the question, God, what would it look like if your kingdom of heaven came to this world? And what would it look like if you use me to make, we can't make the whole world a better place, but we can make our world a better place. See, the good news is that we all have the opportunity to be great. You know, according to the world standards, we don't, because according to the world standards, only those who are wealthy and famous and powerful, only those people are great. But according to God's standard, people who are willing to use what they've been given to serve others are great. And therefore, we all have the opportunity to be great in this life. Why? Because we all have the opportunity to serve. It's like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. himself said, the famous preacher, revolutionary, and leader said, everyone can be great because everyone can serve. You see, serving, my friends, in essence, is not something we do. We don't clock in for an hour and clock out. Serving isn't doing community service weekend. Serving is, biblically speaking, so much more than that. Serving is not something we do. Serving is who we are. Serving is who we are as a church, and serving more specifically is who we are as Lighthouse Church. We don't just serve for an hour or jump into church service and serve. Serving isn't an event. Serving is a lifestyle. That's the core point of my whole message today as I begin to close this thing off. Serving is not an event. Serving is a lifestyle. We don't want to create a church that serves a building. We don't want to create a church that serves institution. We don't create a church that's cultish in how it serves. We want to create a church that is revolutionary because it has experienced the grace of God in our lives. That grace transforms us, changes us, redefines what greatness is, and motivates us not in some kind of religious trying to earn our way to heaven, but in a response by love to make a difference in the world every single day, at home with our family, on the street in public, in the workplace of colleagues, in school, on our sports team, everywhere. Serving is not an event. Serving is not a project. Serving is our lifestyle. It's not what we do. It's who we are. And if you're a part of our community, I need you to know that. This is what we are. We are servants. And if you're curious and looking in, this is who we are. It's not just what we do. It's who we are. Everywhere, every time, with everyone. We endeavor. We aim. Our desire, our prayer, our vision is to be a church that follows Jesus to service. So last week we said our church is a family. This week I'm telling you our church is a team. A team where you can be loved, a team where you can belong, and a team where you can become as you experience and fulfill God's extraordinary purpose for your life. We are family and we are a team. Somebody cue the Lego music, please. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
Thank you for listening, Gurev Mila Mahakwiv. We hope you found this content inspiring and helpful. If you have a question or would like to comment, simply email us at info@lighthousechurch.ie. We'd love to hear from you.